Let's talk about Amsoil. You know why I like Amsoil? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports. And basically, they get it. Recently, Amsoil created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It has insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine. You can get a copy free at amsoil.com/shift. While there, find out more about Amsoil synthetic motor oil too. Like how Amsoil Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by leading industry standard. Go to amsoil.com/shift and get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Man, it seems like 2018 just started. Shift and Steer's back in the studio. It's Matt and Brad again because Aaron is still errant. Hey, you like that? See? A little 18 humor. Hey, everybody. Shift and Steer, thanks for being with us. I'm Brad Fanshaw, and with me is Motorator Matt DeAndrea.
Hello.
I'm excited, dude, because second show of the year.
Yep.
And everything's still fresh, new, everything's going good. But auction week is next week. We're going to be heading to Scottsdale, Arizona.
And I'll tell you, before, in between the little break this past week, I went over and toured. I've never been there. I've toured Turbonetics. The guys at Turbonetics and Precision Turbo.
Cool. Thanks for inviting me, man.
They're in Moorpark, which is
amazing. I would have Ubered up there.
That's like a flight for you.
I would have Ubered up there. They would have said, Brad, your American Express is being charged $390.
Yeah.
And I would have said, Matt, can you give me a ride home?
It was good. I like those guys a lot. We want to do some more stuff with them on some of the old Turbo race cars and the Porsche 935 and... It just comes down to, like, we're restoring these old cars, and Adam likes to take them out and race them and do the vintage racing. But you can rebuild those turbos. I don't know how many times you can get away with it, but it doesn't seem like very many before. Just the tolerances aren't the same.
I was going to say, the tolerances, because they have to create that vacuum. And if they don't create that vacuum anymore, it's like superchargers. You can rebuild an old Roots type supercharger, but at a point, the blades are worn, the case is worn, and it's just not the same.
And I'll tell you, it seems like, that's a good example. It seems like the superchargers haven't changed. It seems like turbos haven't changed. But really, when you go in and you meet the guys that make these things, they have changed a lot.
Like, well, they line them with Teflon now and all kinds of things.
And the bearings and ceramic bearings and seals and oil pressure and like how it's just the internal aerodynamics. You know, you can make more power off of one of these more modern turbos than you can off of the older one at the same boost level. You know, it's just more efficient. And even in the supercharger world, it's all about efficiency, right? And your Vortex and your Paxtons and your Pro Chargers, they're constantly trying to make it more efficient so you get the same amount of boost with less horsepower turning that supercharger around.
Yeah.
You know, so the old, like, A1, Vortec A1 I had in, you know, 1990, 91 is way different than you know, the V3s they run now or the Pro Chargers that we run now and that are much different. So it was interesting to go down there and tour with those guys and get an inside look at what they're doing, their manufacturing and their assembly and stuff. And like you said, their clean rooms and the tolerances that are put into it and the intercoolers and very cool stuff. So now it's like, now I got to build a turbo car. I'm kind of hoping you build a turbo car because you need a car project. You got to stop screwing around, Brad.
No, the problem is I've got car projects. I'm trying to get some other business stuff done so that I can get back on those projects.
That's what I'm saying. Take a project and finish it. Because I really want to get them done. Where else are you going to spend your money?
And, well, you know, I was thinking about, speaking of turbos, a turbojet aircraft would be really nice. Like a King Air.
Are you going to make it?
No, I don't trust myself to make it or fly it. I just want to ride in it.
All right.
So, hey.
Anyway, but you talked about the auctions as well. That's going to be an exciting week. We'll do some
but
stuff.
But before we get in on that, I want to bring something up. Over the holidays, so many people got these Echo Dots. Well, Echo, you know, the Amazon Echo or the
I got one. I haven't even plugged it in yet. Like, it's just, I've been so busy. It's in my bag. I've got it. Have you?
I got one for my mom. I got one for my wife and one for myself here at the office.
Okay.
And they're great, but how it relates to this show is that did you know that you can say, hey, Alexa, play Shift and Steer?
I did not.
You can set it up for podcasts, and then whenever the new episode comes up, you can just say, hey, play the newest Shift and Steer. You got to set it up, you know, like everything. Tell it to go to that app, but it'll play podcasts. So you can get your favorite podcast. So everybody, you need to ask Alexa to set you up with Shift and Steer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and probably CarCast and Man Seeks Adventure while you're at it.
Brad's going to buy every single listener an Echo Dot. So that's a win for everybody listening.
We've got those new ones that are going to be printed with Shift and Steer on them and have our faces.
That would be fantastic.
But you know, along that lines, if you got one, check it out. Get it set up for podcasts, and especially Shift and Steer, CarCast, and Man Seeks Adventure, because you know what? You'll be digging it, and you can sit around in your shop and listen to it as it goes. And it's even easier than doing it on your phone, because you just talk to it.
So once you go through the setup process, then it's easy, right?
Just say play Shift and Steer, newest episode, or episode 114, or hey, play all Shift and Steers, and they'll just start at the beginning, just start playing them in succession. And the other thing about Alexa, I'm telling you, in the shop, you know, I've used it here already, and you can do things like, hey, Alexa, convert 25 millimeters to inches for me. So, like, if you're doing something in the shop where you got to do a conversion or something, she'll figure that up. Or, hey, what is, 29 plus 15 plus 32 plus 72, you know, and she'll go, oh, well, that is, and I'm not going to give it to you because.
No, because you don't want to ruin it.
I don't want to ruin it. It's a surprise.
Have you ever asked Alexa to pick a fight with Siri?
I haven't. Can she do it?
Girl fight.
But you know what you can do with it, which is awesome, and I will demonstrate right now. You may be able to hear it. Because she's just in the other room. Alexa, volume 10. Okay, now we say, Alexa, air horn. Ah, she didn't work. She's lazy. Alexa, air horn. Yeah, that's the only reason I bought it, Matt. I hope you could hear that, but we got the air horn going. And now, Rick in there. You know, yo, Rick. You know, Rick.
Yeah.
He has it in there, and he has it say, Alexa, play soothing bird sounds. And you'll have the babbling brook and the bird sounds.
Yeah. Well, now I'm going to set up podcasts.
Yeah, you got to. That's the awesome thing. And
Alexa, play my voice.
Well, the first thing I asked is, Alexa, who's Brad Fanshaw? And she goes, well, according to Wikipedia, Brad Fanshaw is a, you know, and I'm like going, yeah. She did. She knew.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So.
Wow.
I
who's the narcissist now?
I asked her who Matt DeAndrea was. She said, Matt DeAndrea is a well-known podcast host and works on Shift and Steer and CarCast. He's also known for being a Fox Body aficionado.
So, that's all true. All true stuff.
but hey, so anyways, check part. That out. Figure it out. And you will get going. On keeping up with all the podcasts. But back to auction week. Every year, for those of you that don't know, Scottsdale, Arizona, the general area, Scottsdale, Phoenix, becomes the hotbed of automotive auctions for collector cars. You've got RM, Russo and Steele, Gooding, Barrett Jackson, Silver. I mean, there's all kinds of them. It kind of unofficially kicks off this weekend. I believe it's this weekend with Mecum's big auction, not in Scottsdale, but the auction, you know, that run all the way through Amelia and like that. They kind of kick off this weekend, Kissimmee, Florida, with Mecum. And and one of the things I was thinking about this, Matt, is something to ponder is we know that muscle cars have not backed off at all.
Right.
And there was a time not too long ago that, you know, people in the industry and some experts were saying that, well, you know, as the next generations come along, they didn't grow up with muscle cars. They're not going to, you know, dig them as much. We found that not to be true because, and I think it's partially because of muscle cars in themselves. They're so unique and there's so many varieties, but also because of popular culture, because the cool guy in the movies or in the TV show or whatever it is, that detective always seems to drive a cool muscle car. He's got a Cuda or a Mustang or a Chevelle or a, you know, whatever it is. And the and that's kept that alive generation to generation.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the thing that came to my office from Mecum, and I was looking through the catalog. Well, they actually send you this giant poster, and it had a lot of vintage race cars.
And race cars are on the move. I've been saying it for years.
Yes, but are vintage drag cars? Because drag racing's different than other forms.
Yeah.
It was almost like when you and I grew up, remember going to the drag strip and seeing those cars race, and you remember the names like Gas Ronda and, you know, all those type of people. So I'm wondering if those AFX cars, the old funny cars, things like that, because are they going to hold their value like some of the road racing cars? Because road racing's more universal and worldwide.
Yeah. Well, my thought on that is two things. Is one, it has to have a good story because that's where the value is.
Pedigree.
And all of the great racing cars that are for sale. You know, if it has a great win, you know, Sebring is great to win or Daytona is great to win. But if you had a Le Mans car that won, that
exactly.
was fantastic.
Bruce Meyer.
And the story. Right. The other thing is if it's becoming more widespread where you can take those cars out and race them again, are there vintage drag racing events growing at a level like Monterey or the Midi or, you know, some of these big road racing events?
They're growing, but not as much, I don't
think. You know, like the Rolex Historics in Monterey.
But what I'm seeing, and maybe I'm so close to it, but there are certain icons that I knew growing up and that I was fortunate enough to be friends with, guys like Tony Nancy. Tony Nancy was an innovative top fuel driver, you know, altered driver, and hot rod builder, interior guy. It's that famous seahorse that you see on the seats and the scoop covers of so many vintage dragsters. But you ask anybody from probably about, I'm going to say 40-year-old and younger, have no clue who he is.
Right.
And his iconic cars that sold at RM for a lot of money have gone a couple other times, and every time they're a little less. And I had the opportunity to buy them, and I wish I would have now, but they, because I was friends with them, but those cars to me are just like, oh my God, I'd love to own them. Same thing, though, and I thought, okay, is that just Tony? But then you take a guy like Little John Butera. Little John Butera, who worked with us at Boyd's, he, you know, was an icon in racing long before hot rods and motorcycles, building all of the most winning funny cars, top fuel, and Indy cars. And, you know, but today, now that he's passed, it's almost like the people that know him, mm-hmm. but it's not making those cars worth anything more because they were Little John cars. And I'm wondering, because like we talk about Gas Ronda and we talk about things like that, because part of it, again, is like Adam going out and doing these documentaries on road racing and the, you know, because there weren't really any Paul Newmans or any Steve McQueens or anything like that at the drag strip. They might have been there, but they didn't have a car that they were involved with. So I think some of that is hurting drag racing cars a little bit.
Yeah, but it could be what's next. You know, like you kind of have to saturate one market with.
So you're saying we should buy them up and
corner
the market?
You should buy them up.
Well, I mean, hey, I own the original Moon Eyes Dragster, so I want it to be good.
Yeah.
And I think those old Altereds and those old funny cars and all that stuff is just so cool.
But there needs to be more awareness for it. It's like you talk about us doing the documentary movies. It's because we kept buying cars and they kept coming with
exactly.
great stories that nobody knew. So we wanted to find ways to tell those stories. So as more things like that happens, more articles, more documentaries, more TV shows, more TV docu-series shows create more awareness for them, then people, obviously they know about them, they maybe start to buy them and increases the value of them. And I just like to see a lot of those get preserved and brought out to vintage racing events and get restored and have some money put back into them because they're all pretty special cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part that I like. It's not really about the profit and loss. It's more about...
No, I'm not saying that, like, but we do know that if there's profit to be made, they get preserved a lot more.
Of course, right? And, you talked about your Moon Eyes Dragster in the other room. It's been there for a long time, and it's cool, but it's kind of just hanging up in the air, and it's there. It's like
just a piece of art, man.
It's at what point? You're right. At what point does that thing become valuable enough where you go, I can't keep it there, or I'm going to take it down, and I'm going to restore it, and I'm going to start taking it out, and I'm going to show it, and you're going to get some calls from a museum, go, can we borrow your car? Can we borrow your car? Like we get that all.
That
the
would
time
take
now.
Effort.
You know, it would take a lot of effort. You're like, can we borrow your car? Yeah, if you go in there and you restore it.
If you have a crane to move it from the back of the warehouse.
Yeah, I don't even know how you got it in there. Well, we built the building around it.
But no, it's just an observation. I'd be interested to see because there are a lot of old vintage cars. There's a guy, I don't know if he passed or just getting his collection dispersed or what, but he had a lot of the icons, and they're coming up for sale at Mecum. And it'll be interesting to see. And, everybody should, keep an eye, see. But you had a point of availability of where can you use those cars.
Yeah.
Rather than, like my car. My car, the reason it doesn't go out, not because I'm lazy, is because I looked into it when I first acquired it, and you'd have to ruin the car to take it down the drag strip. Because it's so early that you'd have to do so much to it.
And it's super dangerous.
It's like...
There's got to be a way to put these vintage drag race cars on a track in some sort of exhibition style. Shorter runs and half the power and, just something along the lines of getting them out there and making them kind of fun to do. I mean, believe me, there's a bunch of guys that are doing this vintage road racing, and a lot of those cars are just turned up to 11.
Yeah.
But there's a lot where people are like, this car's super valuable. I detuned it a little bit, to your skill level.
Well, I will say the Moon Eyes Dragster, the guy who worked at Moon, who used to drive it back in the day, because the car went off the track in 1976. I mean, which is amazing because it was from the 50s. But I said to him, yeah, I'd like to get it back, take it to a cackle fest someday. And he said, and he looked at me and with just a dead straight face, he looked and he goes, I wouldn't. He goes, that thing, that was a death machine even in the day. And I went, whoa.
It's scary just in the other room. What engine's in it?
It's got a 392 Hemi with a front-mounted crank-driven blower.
Yeah.
And with a Hillborn injection. But you sit down in it, man, and your nuts are sitting on the rear end.
Yeah.
And it's just got an in-and-out transmission where what's amazing is the bell housing on it is just aluminum. It's not like a blowproof bell housing because it doesn't have a – I guess it doesn't even have a clutch because it's just either in or out. It's one of those where you held the brake, you let the brake go, and, man, it smoked down the strip, And it was, fire suppression was when you went upside down and the sand put it out as you went, it'll be interesting to see. And then as we move to Scottsdale, it'll be interesting to see what is race cars. As you said, pedigree, heritage, wins, where they raced is a big deal. You can have the coolest Aston Martin, but if it raced two races and then got retired, it's not worth anywhere near what another one is.
I think two things that I've noticed is one is Barrett Jackson, which we love, is starting to get more of the European exotic cars. They got some vintage Ferraris and things like that. I think they've got a Ferrari, like a 67 330.
Well, as a matter of fact, I happen to have the Barrett Jackson pre-catalog right in front of me.
So that's one thing is you're going to see more of those because those are big money cars that are going, you know, and Barrett Jackson has been mostly muscle cars, but now they're getting into they're consigning some of these European exotic cars. And two is the English cars, which have always had a reputation of being junk. There's a lot of really special ones with racing history that are really starting to move. This past year, Monterey, we saw Aston Martin race cars go for record numbers at RM, and now they've got some amazing Jaguars, you know, your E-types. I think there's a D-type Jag coming up at RM or Gooding. Maybe it's RM. I don't know, 12 million, 13
million. Oh, with the big wing on the back? That's at RM. Yeah, at RM. Incredible
and
car.
I just want to go and see that car in person because I don't know if I'll ever see it again.
Well, some of them you just want to see and experience the enthusiasm and see, like, okay, what's the guy look like that can pay $14 million for a car? Sometimes it's interesting.
Sitting having a cocktail, I want to see that. But I like to go and see the cars. And there's a few cars that that I'm looking forward to seeing and seeing how they do. One, well, there's two cars at Barrett Jackson that you'll – they're two that are probably their flagship cars. Is they have two Shelby GT350s. They have – the first one is the prototype car. It's like serial number one. That's a street car. And the second one is – the GT350R race car. I don't know how many 350Rs did they make in 65, 33 or 34 or 36, something like that. But this car is like the winningest one ever. So, and I kind of like that. So you're going to have a pair of GT350s, one prototype street car and one most successful or at least the most amount of miles on a race car. Those I'm interested in.
But what about the Midas Touch, which is going across the block at Barrett Jackson on Saturday?
What is it?
It is George Barris's personal 308 all-gold Ferrari.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I never knew he had an all-gold.
Does it have a Chevy 350 in it?
I mean, it's got all the right stuff, but boy, that is gold. The wheels are gold. The two-tone gold. Gold interior, and it's got the big George plaque on it and everything like that. It's always fun because there's always such...
But there's a story. Like, even if you think the car's ugly, there's a story, and that's what you want.
Ugly
you want
is a matter of taste, as we all know.
Or, no.
I may not like it, you may not like it, and I'm not saying I don't like it, but other people might think it is the coolest car ever, and you know, they always wanted to own something to George Barris's, and why not have his personal Ferrari? But you know, other people might like you know, like this Black Beauty, the original 71 Street Hemi Challenger, you know, or they're selling the last known produced Hemi Cuda, and they're also on the other end of the scale, they're selling the first 2017 Ford GT.
That's a charity car.
That's
though.
A charity car.
Right.
But they're still selling it.
Yeah.
And so you can get the last Hemi Cuda. Then you could go pay them for that. Then you could run back up and you could bid for charity.
Yeah.
And see, all the money you spent on the Cuda would be the write-off that you paid on this one.
This is a big deal, this Ford GT, because if you weren't on the list to
you
get
you couldn't
one,
get it.
You couldn't get it. And you can't buy it from somebody else because John Cena, the wrestler, just got in trouble.
I read about that.
Right? Because he had his Ford GT, and he did a video, and he made it all famous. And then he sold it. And Ford said,
we're going to sue your ass.
Well, first they said, hey, man, you're in breach of contract. You should get the car back. When you do, let us know. And I guess he ignored that request.
Well, I mean, whoever thought there would be a day where you bought a car under contract? You're paying the manufacturer a ton of money.
Yeah.
LaFerrari, same thing. You couldn't sell it for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, come
somebody
on.
Somebody else got in trouble. You know what it was? It was the dude like from Shark Tank or something. He sold it and got in trouble. And Ferrari did something that like they made him buy like three other cars. They made him buy like... Like two
spend more money with us,
no, yeah.
But it's either spend money on more cars or spend it on your attorneys. So, okay, I'll buy some more cars.
No, they're like, you have to buy like two Californias and an F12,
right?
You know, and or you're off the list. You know, and so I think he ended up buying all that stuff.
Well, I know Sammy had to buy a an FF. Just he was taking somebody else's car off the list. They handed it to him. But Ferrari would only grant that if he bought an FF. So he bought an FF, never even took delivery of it. The dealership just sold it for him.
These
you know, it's like
first
crazy.
World problems, Brad.
No kidding. No kidding. You know what? Another cool car that they've got at Scottsdale that's if you're a Corvette guy and you have tons of bread, this would be the car to have in your collection to have all your cars surrounding it, is this 1965 Chevrolet Corvette cutaway coupe. Now, you know how they used to do back in the day?
Yeah.
Cutaway engines, or they'd have the car expanded so you could see all the cool thing.
Yeah.
Well, look at that, Matt. I mean, would that be like if you were a Corvette guy, the car to have?
Those are not easy to make, and they're expensive
to make. They're super expensive to make. Take hours and hours where you can see all the gears in the transmission, and it's done with detail. In this case, what we're looking at is a body that is actually on hydraulics, and it was so they would use it at car shows, and the body would lift. You could see the chassis, see the motor, the transmission, everything was cut away, and then when the body came back down, looked like a regular Corvette. So this one's pretty special. And
that'd be cool. I'd like to sit in it and watch TV and go up and down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it does say that it's being sold on a bill of sales. You're not going to be able to drive it on the street.
Oh, that's okay.
So
the Peterson Museum should buy it. They need more toys.
Yeah, they should buy something like that. What do you think of, you know, now we've been talking about Barrett Jackson, and a couple cars that I noted that I saw in both the Barrett Jackson and the RM catalog, which was very interesting, was the number one, Lamborghini Aventadors. I guess they're holding their value, because a car like that, that's so late model, showing up at an auction, you know, it's kind of a sign of the times.
We always talk about how the big brother car always brings up the little brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 190 SL Mercedes, you couldn't give that car away. But the
now
300
it's being
SL
pulled up by the 300s.
You know, is a million two. So now the 190 is like, well, you know, from 50 feet away and you squint, they got kind of a cool look, right? So it could kind of look, you know, the same, the Roadsters, you know. So now they're, you know, they were 30 grand. They're getting up to a couple hundred grand.
Yep.
And
which blows me away.
And the cars need to be special. So the car manufacturers, the new manufacturers are making, you know, 5 of this and 10 of that and 30 of this. And there was a time in like the 80s and 90s where that nobody cared. It didn't take. But now it is. When you get a Lamborghini Centenario, or you get, some one-off Ferrari FXX, whatever, however many they made of that. And Bugattis. I mean, like you can get a Bugatti Veyron, or you can get one of the Roadsters or whatever, and they're still holding their value pretty well, you know. I think it costs more money maybe to buy a Pagani Huayra at auction than it would be to buy one new.
I haven't seen one go through an auction lately, so I don't know. But like my buddy bought a Lamborghini Aventador SV. One of 6 in America. His was supposedly the only white one.
Oh, yeah. He's got the second white one.
Which is, a whole nother story. The only white one with non-cleared decals. But anyways. But, I mean, he paid a ton of money for that thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's that limited availability and, you know, like you said, they always drag him, that might retain his value in that. Because I know the Ferrari that he had, he lost his ass on that car, you know, paid a ton and got nothing for it.
You know that I like the vintage Lamborghinis. You know that Adam Kroll is a big fan of vintage Lamborghinis. And you start seeing the Countach really starting to go up, especially the early model Countach cars. And Diablos, early Diablos and the special Diablos. By the way,
what about Jalpas? Are they?
They're the Jalpa. It's I like that car. I think that's a great car to buy now. I think it's going to take a little while for it to start to move in value. But I think that is a great 80s icon.
I always liked those cars. They were always undervalued, yeah. And it was because they weren't as crazy as the... It would be like today...
It wasn't a 12, got, it was an 8.
You've got an Aventador, and over here you got a Huracan, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing. And they didn't have the big wing. They didn't have the big flares, but they were a good-looking silhouette. And like you said, an 8 instead of the 12.
Yeah.
But neat cars. Yeah. And
it was in the Rocky movie.
Yes. I didn't know that, but I'm going to say yes. Another car that I noticed.
The one with Drago, I think. He goes to Russia before he goes.
Oh.
He's got the giant house with the robot.
Right.
And he has like this moment of flashbacks where he's just driving around. He's driving around in the night in the black Yalpa. And there's a scene I think he's washing the car as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You know a lot about these.
I like Stallone, and I like vintage Lamborghinis. I like Rocky movies. But one of the cars I'm looking forward to seeing starting to make a comeback is in the vintage Lamborghini world. One of my favorite ones is the 1965 350 GT. It's the first model Lamborghini. Corolla has one. We have it there. The black one's one of the only... Almost entirely.
Are those four headlight cars or two headlight cars?
It is four, but it's behind a single lens.
Okay.
I think it's a beautiful car. And they went up, they hit $1 million, and then they dropped down, and now they're starting to correct. And it's funny because the Toyota, the 2000 GT, a funky-looking car, right? That car also hit $1 million.
The 2000 GTs are on fire. Those things are nuts.
They were. But here you have two cars that were $500,000. You have a 65 Lamborghini 350. You have a Toyota 2000 GT. Mm-hmm. They're both about $500,000. They both shot up to $1 million. They both dropped back down to $500,000, and now they're crawling up again. But the difference is those cars should not be the same price. As cool as they are in their own rights, the 2000 GT, they made quite a few of. It's six-cylinder. And steel body, and the Lamborghini is 12-cylinder aluminum body, 120 made, disc brakes, 5-speed, like stuff in 1965 that you wouldn't get. So what's happening is
and Italian.
And Italian. So now those 2000 GTs are floating in the $500,000 to $600,000 range, maybe $650,000. And I think that's kind of where they should stay for a while, where... We're excited to see the Lamborghini 350 GT. There's one coming up at Scottsdale at Gooding. It's gorgeous. Color combination is fantastic. Silver. And I think the estimate is $750,000 to $825,000. And I still think at that price, that's a car to buy. Because that car is going to hit $1 million again, and it's going to go up.
You sound like a promoter of Lamborghinis, Matt.
I think if somebody buys that car, then the one we have is going to be more valuable.
That's what it sounds. Exactly. Exactly.
There's a little bit of that, but I think it's a great car.
But
and I've driven them, and they're fun. That's the black car that I'm talking about that Adam has is the one that we put in the James Franco commercial when I went out. We talked about it
a long
ago. We filmed. He did a Gucci sunglasses commercial, and he needed a car and something vintage, and he wanted it black because had sort of that the look for the commercial. And we, I got up in the morning and I drove it down.
It was kind of James Bondish.
Yeah, it kind of was. Yeah. It was him and a hot Italian girl and sunglasses. And he was driving the car and he picks up the girl. And we shot it at Chateau Marmont. Mm-hmm. It was like 5 in the morning up and down Sunset. And I had to teach James Franco how to drive that car. So it's a fantastic car. It's fun to drive.
Well, the other thing, too, is the... Porsches, they just keep climbing. And now what I'm seeing showing up at the auctions, one of my favorite cars of all time, which are the 930 wide body slant nose.
Yeah.
They call them a flat nose. I always called them a slant nose.
I always said slant nose.
Back in the day, they always called them a slant nose because I almost bought one back in the 80s when they were new.
Yeah.
And always loved those cars. And they, I think, are... just headed towards the stratosphere because if there was a big difference, there were the factory slant nose cars, and then the ones that were kind of dealer installed or aftermarket.
There's one for sale in Washington, like at a classic car.
Black one?
No, I think it's red.
I saw a black one. Oh, I'm sorry, on the East Coast for sale that only had like 15,000 miles or something.
Yeah.
Triple black. Oh, it was gorgeous.
On a similar note, I like the 930. I like the 930 turbo street cars. I'm so in love with the 935 race cars that the 930 street cars are fantastic.
And it sucks that we could have bought those cars so cheap just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And now they're just...
For 35 grand.
Yeah. I had a friend who bought one for like 35 grand and was out doing donuts in it and stuff like that, just beating the hell out of it. And now... it's an expensive car that you wouldn't be doing that in, which is too bad, you know, because it's it'd be fun to be beaten. But one of the cars that has always been like a touch point of Porsche guys is the 959.
Yeah.
That car was always like the dream car of any guy. Now,
and it's kind of hit a ceiling.
I was just going to say
300
that.
SL, like the Gullwing and the Roadster. There's two things that are happening with the 959 and the 300 SL is they made enough that they're at every auction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go to Scottsdale, you're going to see two or three of them. Go to Monterey, go to Amelia, and you're going to find them there. I like both of those cars. I'm a huge fan of the 959. But they're floating around $1 million.
Well, I think that's a hard thing to say because you can go to any one of those auctions, you're going to see a Shelby Cobra, too.
At this point, the 300 SL is at every auction.
Yeah, but
three or four.
The 959, one of the things that hurt it is a lot of them aren't street legal because they were gray market cars when they came in.
Yeah.
And so they're more like collectible pieces.
Bruce Kennepa will make it street legal for only twice the value of the car.
I was going to say,
whatever it
costs. But I mean, they were awesome cars. You know, and I got a poster of one in my garage, and I just look at it and I go, they're awesome. They've dated a little bit over the years. Mm-hmm. They become a little dated. You know, because you look at the 930, it's still got classic lines. 959 has a little bit of an older look to it, but awesome cars. And, you know, now the one that I don't understand was in the RM catalog, they had a 1977 International Scout. Now, I never thought I'd see the day that RM
is selling an
had at Scottsdale, you know, not at Auctions America, at RM in Scottsdale, a 1977 International Scout, and their estimate is between $70,000 and $90,000. I'm like,
It was just a minute ago where those were for sale with a sign in a Home Depot parking lot.
Right? Sitting alongside somebody's house, a bunch of leaves all over it.
Yeah,
you know?
And now.
But now I think, back to your theory of things dragging it up, Broncos have drug up the International Scout.
Yeah, they have.
Because Broncos, you can't even find them anymore because everybody's grabbed them up. So what's the next thing? Well, the International Scout kind of looks like those. You know, because Chevy never made that little mid-sized, you know, 4x4. So I guess that's what's dragging it up. And it's probably a testing. RM's probably going, let's throw one in at Scottsdale and see how it does. If it does, then we'll start booking them.
Why not?
So I have cornered the market. I've bought 36 International Scouts.
So all of them.
Yes. Yes.
All of them that aren't rusted.
All of them that were not rushed, crushed, or rusted. So, it's going to be an interesting year. It will set the tone, as it does every year, for all the auctions to come behind it, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, we're going to be cruising around out there. I don't think we're doing any live podcasts or anything, but...
Not this year.
But I would say Thursday night, whatever that is, the 18th, 19th, I'm going to be cruising over to RM to be looking around. So if you swing by there, say hi. I'd like to go to Gooding on Friday. That's when that Lamborghini 350 is going up for auction. I'd like to be there for that. So again, if you see me there, come over there, say hi. And I'm sure Friday night, Saturday night, we'll be up at Barrett Jackson as well. And cruising around and checking things out. So we're going to be popping around probably all three of those auctions. Are you going to Russo at all?
I don't. I would like to. I usually do, but they moved. Yeah. And it's a little bit harder to get to.
Yeah,
and you know how moving around, it's kind of like Monterey. You got to kind of plan everything. Otherwise, you spend all your time moving from place to place. I want to get over to Gooding. I would like to get over to RM and definitely be at Barrett. And, you know, Michael Anthony's coming over with me. So we're gonna hang out over there. So
we're great spenders of other people's money.
You know, hey. So like Matt said, you know, if you're walking around and you see us, come up and say hi to Mike. And go, Mike, I want your autograph. Oh, hey, Brad. Hey, you know. So, but no, it's always a good time. It's car buying and selling. It's a big social time. Everybody's been coming, and there's an open bar, so I'm there.
You're going to see a lot of great car guys that are out there as well. And, you know, I know there's no way – our friend Ken Ligafelter would miss Scottsdale Auction Week. He's excited about it, I'm sure. He's probably going to be at that Meekum one and kiss me before.
Oh, yeah.
And then jet right on over.
He'll probably come up to us and go, I bought all these old drag cars, man.
Yeah. So. He's going to like, I'm telling you, it's like those things are like sort of the hidden value. Yeah. I bought 19 of them and I got them for a steal.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be like, damn.
In a few years from now, he's like, I'm making bank on those things. Yeah.
I like, you know. I'm making a million on each one, man.
Yeah,
you know,
telling you, like he's such an impulse buyer. That's what I love about him. He's such a passionate car guy that I told you he has his Vector. His purple Vector, like a very dark purple Vector. I don't even think he knew what a Vector was at the
Call
time.
It eggplant.
Like he bought it, he's like, oh, that's cool, and it's got 80s style. He's like, I'm in. And you know, he got a great deal on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got a great deal on it.
If I win the lottery tonight for $440 million, then I can act like that.
Yeah. If I win, then you're probably not going to hear from me again.
You'll just find me at the auctions just kind of like going, yeah, I'm going to buy one of those. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And then I'll get on my jet and fly home and sit around.
My mom calls me all the time. She's like, hey, you should buy a lottery ticket. And then a couple days later, she'll be like, did you win? I'm like, I answered the phone, so no.
Answer the phone.
Yeah. Like, if you don't hear from me, yeah, then I
won. Matt would show up to do the podcast, and the door would be locked. He'd be like, Brad, that number's been disconnected.
Yeah, Brad's like, gone, building for sale.
Brad's on the beach somewhere. So it's all the mails pushed through the mail slot and piling up. But, no, it's always fun. You know, I already got my passes, got all my laminates that came in the mail and ready to rock and roll.
I didn't see that yet. I got to get on that.
But anyway, so, hey, everybody, come see us. Come find us. I'm sure that we will have a show telling you all about what we saw and kind of prove our theories or disprove our theories on what's selling, what's not selling.
If you guys are going to go out there, if anybody's buying anything or selling anything, let us know.
Yeah, seriously, let us know. And you can always reach us, you know, by hitting us up through the Instagram. Like if you don't know, you know, don't know where to find us or something, you know, just leave a message on the Instagram message, because I'm constantly checking that throughout the weekend. And Matt and I then can find you. So just go, hey, and we'll look at it. We'll go, I don't know. We don't want to meet with him. This guy. Yeah, that guy. So,
A little follow up on from a few weeks ago before the holidays. Thanks to everybody that tweeted me and sent me messages about the Fox Body Mustang RC car body.
Oh, did you find it?
There's a couple of them out there. There's this one that's floating around that's kind of like, it's like a drift Fox body.
Okay.
It's got a really weird, like, body kit on it, but maybe a little trimming and some blackout paint. You can probably turn that into a pretty decent Fox body. It's not going to be like legit 93 Cobra, but it's pretty close. So I might have to get one of those bodies and see what I can build. I can't figure out, do I do that or I finish the real full-size car first?
Finish the real full-size car first.
Yeah, maybe. But I like it. I like
speaking of which, and I was going to tell you this, and I'm glad you brought that up because
now I know where I get the red paint, by the way. If you listen
there
to
you go.
Week, I
get, see?
You
know, yeah.
I'm just going to spray that.
What was
same
the name
red
of that place?
I think it's automotivefinishes.com. I'm not quite sure, but the website's yellow.
When I was back in Nebraska... It was a sunny day and it was cold, but I was driving down the street and there sat like a cherry, maybe an, I don't know, I'm going to say like a 87 Fox body notchback with a 5 liter, and thing was a cherry. I mean, it was just perfect. And I was like going, I should take a picture of that, send it to Matt. And I thought, nah, that would just encourage his addiction. So I bought it and I'm building it and we're racing, man.
You should.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, you should do that.
But I'm going to have Cal Auto Creations do it and build a $1 million Fox Body notch back.
It'll be the second one.
It'll be the second one.
Exactly. Whatever I got in mind, it's too much. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening, and we appreciate you telling a friend about the podcast. And, of course, as always, you can check us out on all of our social media at Shift Steer Media.
And check out my page, Bond Speed Brad, on Instagram.
And I'm at Moderator, and that's it. I'm Audi 5K.
That's out, man. We're headed to the auctions, and you should be too. But if you don't make it, just listen to the show next time because we'll be telling you all about it. Talk to you later. Shift and steer. Hey, I'm Brad Fanshaw, and for Aaron Hagar, who's still stuck on the mountain, and...
Oh, yeah, that's me.
That's you, man. That's your cue.
I'm Matt DeAndrea.
All right. This is Shift and Steer. Thanks for listening.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.